Rowdy Alternative. Today we got Cody Parks from Cody Parks in the Dirty South. How are you, man?
Going on. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, dude. So you've been keeping busy out there with shows and everything?
Yeah, we've actually been off for like the past couple months on the road. We've only had our in-town show for the past 2 months, but we're pretty busy in June and July and August, so we've got a busy few months coming up.
Hell yeah. Do you have like certain spots in Nashville that like you play like regularly, or like what's that looking like? Like certain like clubs or venues, whatever?
Yeah, we don't play in town too much. We host this show once a month called Filthy Friday, and we do it at Live Oak, and it's you know, it's a full, we play about an hour, but we'll have, you know, some buddies open up for us playing rounds or their bands playing or whatever.
Yeah, man, I love that. I love that bar. I think honestly, that's like the only one I've really been to when I go down there with like the Raise Rowdy guys and shit. Like for the, we did like the Butt Rock Night and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think, did you play that at all? I don't know if you played the Butt Rock Night.
I've never played it. I think, I don't know if it was the last one or it might have been the last one. I'm not sure, but, Mad and Nikki T asked us to play, but I want to say like half of our band was like out of town or something. Our drummer was getting married is what it was.
Okay. I got you. But yeah, it's always fun out there, man. And well, I guess if we're on the topic of your shows, I want to say first and foremost that your guys' shows look fucking intense and like in the best way possible. And like being an artist, like I feel I always love asking people this. How much I feel like with live shows, that's a big factor for fans if they're going to stick around or not. You know what I mean? Like I feel like that's a hook, and once you get them, you reel them in, right? So like, oh, yeah. Like what with your thoughts on that? Like how much thought or like what's your methods when you like plan out a live show or like what do you want to convey to the audience?
Really just, you know, get our energy across. I think our music is, you know, it's unique, energetic music, and I want our live show to match that and vice versa. You know, we're a live band, and, I take pride in that, you know, and, I just, you know, we try to, when we put our show on, you know, I'm a big Kiss fan, and, you know, bands like Kiss and Van Halen, you know, when they were playing in the clubs, they always tried to put on a show like they were playing in an arena, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what we do. And we try to, you know, we got our blinding lights we bring in the fog, no matter where we're playing, you know, and it's like, we just try to go, you know, do as much as we can and go above and beyond to, you know, give the folks what they came to see. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And I haven't been able to see you play live in person, but I've seen plenty of videos on your Instagram and everything. And I mean, I could definitely see that influence with like it looks very energetic, crowds into it and everything. Yep. And I guess I know this is a very cliche question to ask a musician. I'm aware of that, but like with you, it'd be kind of interesting to hear because of the country metal thing. Who are like, if you had to pick a few inspirations, I know it's cliche, like who would you pick? Like if you would have to for like the country metal kind of mix you got going on.
Yeah. So, you know, like I said, you know, Kiss is my favorite band and I love their music, but you know, mainly from a live standpoint, nobody does a show like they do. And, right. I'd say, you know, live definitely them. But you know, as far as the music goes sonically, like some metal bands, I love Motley. I love Pantera. You know, somebody once said we're like Def Leppard on cornbread. I love 80s metal. And yeah, I wouldn't say like our entire catalog sounds like Def Leppard by any means, but we definitely have, you know, the 80s arena rock, hair metal, riff rock thing in there on some songs. And you take a song like of ours, like Redneck Rich, it's got like the Pantera thing, you know.
Yeah.
So I'd say I love Rat too. Rat's one of my favorite bands.
Fuck yeah.
Judas Priest. And it's probably, you know, those five or six bands when it comes to the hard rock and metal side. And on the country side, you know, I I love 90s country. Growing up in Georgia, the 90s, heavily influenced by that. But I really love, you know, Bo Cephas and David Allan Coe and Lynyrd Skynyrd as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. I could add, and you mentioned Pantera. I could absolutely. That was the first thing I thought of when I first listened to your guys' song. Is like, it's got the riffs of Pantera and like the vocals of Skynyrd. And it was like, it was a, you know, because you got, it's funny because you have the genre of Southern rock that's been around forever. But like, uh-huh. You guys, it's like, it's literally like metal music. Like, it's kind of cool. It's not Southern rock. It's like, yeah, a step above that. And I feel like that could be hard to achieve. Have you always been wanting to do that? Or did you start out country? Did you start out more metal? Or like, did it all start like all at once with both genres intertwined?
Yeah. So I grew up a drummer playing the drums. And I've always, you know, I didn't really start singing and playing until late in college. And you know, I always wanted to be a front man, and I grew up idolizing the 80s front man, and that's what I wanted to do, but I always grew up playing drums and hard rock and metal bands. And when it came time to like start writing songs, and I felt more connected to writing about what was real to me and my upbringing and life in Georgia, in Monroe, small town Georgia, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know. It hit me one day where maybe it was Def Leppard or somebody, because their productions are so huge. Mutt Lang's their producer, mm-hmm. and they have like 100 guitar tracks on their records. And it's like, you got one guitar playing this, and I was like, okay, well, you know, if you take this guitar and you take a steel guitar and play that part, and you get a banjo and you play that guitar part, and you put me singing, you know, country shit and shit that's real to me on top of it, then maybe I can create this thing called country metal. And there's always been crossovers, folks like Hank 3, you know, we get compared to him.
Oh yeah,
a lot,
I love Hank 3, yeah.
And I actually met him when I was a kid up here in Nashville. I saw him play at
a
place that doesn't exist anymore called 12th and Porter. But I don't know. I just wanted this arena rock version of country metal. And, you know, that's what I wanted to create. And I've always had that sound in my head. And I had to, you know, had to find the right, because I feel like you got to have the right guitar players to make that happen, you know?
Yeah, man. And you mentioned Mutt Lang, like probably the best producer out of, you know, the 80s metal genre, and, you know, probably top five of all time, in my opinion, I think.
Yeah. And if not, you know, he might have sold more records than anybody, you know, because he's got Def Leppard that has several
Hysteria
diamond albums, but,
and, yeah,
you know, but not even them. This, you know, Black Album, you got Shania, yeah, Twain, you got Bryan Adams, you know, and like,
yeah,
all those artists have sold gazillions of records, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, man. And like, that just says something about a producer who could like mend all those things together and come out with like, you know, Black Album is one of the greatest albums of all time. You got,
I meant to say Back in Black.
Or Back in Black. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Back in Black. Who was, I think Black, who was Black Album? I can't think of it off the top of my head.
That's Metallica,
but,
and that's yeah, Bob Rock.
Bots Bob Rock. He's another one. He's real good too.
Yeah.
But yeah, man. So like, who do you guys produce yourself? Do you produce or record somewhere? How do you guys do that?
Yep. So, my producer is Johnny Palmieri, and, everything that I've put out since I've been in Nashville, he's produced. And, he also is our rhythm guitar player now.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, he, before COVID, had a different group of guys, and he was still our producer then. But, you know, when we came back from COVID, he's like, I want to play in the band if you need somebody to play rhythm and sing background vocals.
Yeah, yeah, man. And that's awesome. Like, kind of have that camaraderie, too. Like, you're in the band with, you know, the guy who records you guys. So that's,
yeah,
pretty sweet.
It's really, really a blessing, man. 'Cause he's kind of like our music director too. You know, it's a, a classic term for, you know, a country artist's band is they have a band leader or a music director, and he's able to come to rehearsal and has all the parts, you know, that's on the records in his head, and you show everybody, oh, this is what I'm doing here on the record, and all these things, you know, and it's really, it's nice to have.
It's funny you mentioned band leader. I got a question for you just because I'm ignorant on some shit like that. I just listened to Nikki T and Kurt just put a podcast out today that I listened to, and they're interviewed Luke Combs' band leader. And that's the first time I've heard the term band leader before, but I had no idea what they do. And I kind of still don't. Can you can you explain that at all? Like what that entails?
Well, you know, I can't speak to what they do, but as far as what I know is they come really knowing like all the parts, and they might know what's going on. We don't use tracks, but a lot of those artists use tracks, and they know what's going on. They might even build the tracks, you know, and they just kind of, they know what's going on with everybody's part at all times. And whereas is, I don't know, you might have the one guitar player that you said us is he knows his part and that's what he plays, you know, but I feel like the band leader just kind of organizes everything and makes it easy for the artist to where the artist ain't got to
worry about it the whole time.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. And also when we're talking about like genre bending and everything, which fascinates me to know, and I think another example like that's popping today is out in Texas. You have like the rock, country. I feel like everything's just in a blender over there. Do you think nowadays in 2024 that like there, you always hear about the stories of fans who like, oh, that sounds too country, or that sounds too metal, it sounds too grunge. Like, do you think the blurring of the genre lines matters anymore? Like, what are your thoughts on that whole thing? I feel like it's not a new thing, but it's definitely boomed, I think, in the past couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it really, I don't know, it's kind of going that way to where, and there's so many collaborations and so many crossovers with artists, you know, working with another artist from another genre. I mean, I feel like every album that comes out now, there's a lot of features, you know, which has historically been like a common thing in rap music. But now with country, I feel like, you know, every country album that comes out that's more progressive, you might have three or four artists on there doing a feature with the main artist. Whereas 10 years ago, you didn't really see that, you know, at all in country music. And, I don't know. Like, you know, like you said, there's so many people that say that's not country, or that's, to me, I get both of them, you know, it's like, oh, that's not country. Y'all are a metal band, or that ain't metal, man. This is bro country or some shit, you know? And it's like, well, y'all need to make up your mind. What do you know? But it's, to me, the country part of what we do is me, you know, and my stories that I'm telling, and the authenticity of what I'm singing about and it being real to me. And it's not, when, to me, what classifies country is not necessarily like a sonic thing. Mm-hmm. And it's more about the lyric and, you know, if it's real or not. Metal is a different story. I think metal is 100% a sonic thing, you know? And, that's how we can be both. We have the metal element, and I think our songs are country songs, you know?
Right.
And you know, it's, you know, somebody said something, and rap is a whole different thing. To me, rapping is a delivery of how you deliver the lyric, you know, it's like a cadence type thing. Mm-hmm. And, I just think, you know, it's, good music's good music. You ain't got to, you know, try to fit it in a box or anything. And, you know, I have this brand here, and that's the best way I can describe us is country metal, you know?
Yeah, man. Yeah. Like you hit the nail. That's kind of how I was thinking that too, about like you got the, if you would separate the country and like metal genres or whatever, you're right. Cause like country, it's about like the songwriting, more leaning towards the lyrics, right? But like when it comes to rock or metal or any of that, it's like, at least for me, like I'm hooked on it with the sonic portion, the instrumental element to it. So as an artist who does both, is there a certain way you prefer to lean, or you find yourself like focusing on more when you're like creating or writing a song?
Not really. I feel like, you know, when we write tunes, a lot of times I'd say it's probably half and half, to where it starts with, I got this riff that I really love.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we need to put, you know, a lyric and a melody to it. Or I might have a lyric idea or a hook, you know, and I'm like, yep. Okay, now how can we make this metal? How can we make it us, you know?
Yeah.
Because by itself, it's just a country lyric and a melody. So we got to bring in the metal thing to make it country metal, you know, and vice versa. You know, if I got a killer riff that, you know, I want to flesh out and turn into a song, then, you know, we write around it.
Right. So when you do write, like the songwriting portion of it, is it usually just you, or do you like talk to the guys in the band? Like what's your method with that?
It's your traditional Nashville writing room.
Okay.
A lot of what we've been writing lately has been, me, our producer, Johnny, and, a songwriter, you know, we write a lot of songs with, our buddy, Matt McKinney, if you know him.
I heard the name. I'm not familiar with his stuff though.
He wrote that classic country love song called Dick Down in Dallas, if you've heard that one.
Yeah, Trey's song.
Yeah. But no, I'm buddies with all those guys. And we're actually in a songwriting group together called No Hits.
Okay. I didn't know that.
And but I'd say we cut back in February, we cut like 6 songs, and 5 of them I think Matt was on. And you know, sometimes it's me and Matt and another writer or another track guy, and sometimes it's me and Johnny and another writer. It's just, you know.
Yeah, man. It's funny. When that just reminded me of this story. Last time I was in Nashville, we went out to, have you heard of Juicy Seafood, I think the place is called?
Oh, yeah.
That's the most disgusting shit I've ever had in my life. But we went out there with Nikki T and Matt, and Trey came out. And he got that like shit that comes in a bag, bro. Fucking gross. Like that. Like, I love Nashville, but man, like I could never go there again and be happy. I was shitting for like 3 hours straight. But
yeah, I don't.
Yeah,
man. I think I ate at Juicy's one time. I can't remember. I remember. It might have been, man. My fiance owns a boutique in East Nashville. And I want to say when she bought her store, or not bought her store, but opened her store, and we were like setting up her shop and everything, I felt like we were sitting on the floor eating Juicy Seafood at the like to go plates or something. I can't remember.
Yeah.
I think it was Juicy Seafood.
It might as well be on the floor, in my opinion. But anyway, so with the guys in the band, when you guys first, I guess, how'd the band form? We could start there.
Well, my current group of guys, let me back up. So when I moved to town, I met my fiance, and she was like familiar with like all the rock nights. She's a huge Kiss. We got engaged at Kiss's last show.
Oh, no shit.
At Madison Square Garden, yeah. And she was going, there used to be this show that happened once a week in Nashville called the Rock and Roll Residency.
Okay.
And it used to happen, if you know where Live Oak is, it used to happen a couple doors down, like kind of where, I guess, Tailgate Brewery's still there. It's on the corner at the roundabout.
Yep.
There used to be this place called Dan McGinnis, and every Tuesday night, this band called the Rock and Roll Residency would play, and they would just play like hard rock covers from like the late 60s up. Sometimes they would do 80s, you know, and they play for a couple hours, and then you'd even have like real rock stars there hanging out because a bunch of people live here, you know, and they'd get up and do a couple songs. And she started taking me to that, and you know, I'd been to Whiskey Jam and used to Revival, if you've ever heard of Revival. Used to happen at Tin Roof, and my fiance's store is called Dirty Living, and I had the band name Cody Parks and the Dirty South, and this coincidence, you know, I'm like, yeah, what if we like start our own night called Dirty Thursday, and we play and like you set up like a pop-up shop, whatever, you know. I'm getting off track here, but
no,
but
you're good.
I would go to these shows, and I was like, I gotta find the right guys to play my music, and I'd, you know, just kind of scout guitar players, you know, and that's really how I got, you know, a group of guys when I moved here. But when we came back from COVID, like I said, Johnny was like, "Yo, if you need new guys, like I want to play guitar." And then I just really just kind of picked dudes that I knew, you know, and I was like, yo, I'm putting a new band together and, you know, want you to join us if you're into it, you know, that's really how it went.
Right on. So when you form a band like that, like, did you guys gel immediately? Was it kind of a while to really click, or how'd that all work out?
Yeah, well, it wasn't too... It was kind of painless, man, when we came back from COVID, because we had already had a catalog of songs that was easy to, you know, hey, learn these songs. You know, we probably had, I don't know, at the time, maybe like majority of our set was available on Spotify, you know, and I knew great players, and it's, you know, it's nothing for them to learn them, you know, and it's just... I got the same group of guys that I've had since I came back from COVID, and everybody's cool and everybody's, you know, can play and all the things, you know, being a good hang is like one of the most important things.
I'd imagine. That's interesting. So like in Nashville, is that, without, you know, we don't have to gossip here, but like in Nashville, is that a common thing? Are most people good hangs, I guess, down there? Because there's so many people from so many different walks of life all moving to one place. Like, is it pretty easy to click with new people that you meet, or do you kind of have to like see them out first before you let them in like the click or band or songwriting group? Like, how do you go about that?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say that I feel like I've been blessed with a great group of guys that are bought into what we're doing, and they're fun, you know, fun dudes and professional at the same time, and know how to turn it on when it's time to turn it on, and you know.
Yeah, for sure. It looks like you guys got a good group out there. I see it all the time with like you guys and like a lot of the just around the Rage Rowdy, you know, family, I guess, the people who kind of surround themselves in there. It seems like a tight knit group. When you moved to Nashville, like, what was that step like? Cause that seems like a massive step to take. Like, from, you're from Georgia, you know, it's kind of close, but still, I mean, you're traveling that far.
Yep. I started coming up here when I was a young kid, cause my dad owned a music store forever. And we came up every summer for the NAMM show, if you know what the NAMM show is.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So I was already like pretty familiar with the city. And when I got into writing songs and wanting to be an artist, Dad had an old bandmate that lived up here and was familiar with the, you know, kind of the the songwriting thing up here, and I would come up and stay with him, and he'd take me to some things, you know, and it kind of evolved into where I was coming up here maybe like every couple of weeks. And I was like, you know, I need to make it happen. And I found a room and a roommate on Nashville's Facebook page. And I came up here one week in December to check out the apartment. And I think I put a deposit down then and moved like a week later or something, or 2 weeks later.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't really know really too many folks, you know, just a few folks that I'd met, you know, coming back and forth. But it wasn't really, I mean, I was hungry, dude. And, you know, it wasn't any second guessing for me. I knew it was what I wanted to do. And wasn't really right. Nervous about it at all. You know, I just was ready to get up here and work.
Right. So when like artists do that, like typically, I guess, if you know, like, do they move there like immediately? They try to like find gigs, find places to go? Or are they like, I need to establish myself first or something like that?
For me, it was come up here and try to write as much as I could, you know, from the jump, you know, and write as much as I could. And with as many people as I could. It's kind of like dating, I guess. I don't know. It's like you're speed dating. And
yeah,
it's like you're just trying to, you know, figure out who you mesh well with. And I was trying to go to every, you know, opportunity I could that might have been like a networking thing. And then it's I met Gina, my fiance, and started going. I was like, man, I need to put this band together, you know. And
yeah.
You know, I moved here to be an artist, and I need to find these guys that can do this thing that's in my head, you know? And yeah. I started up, it was probably like a month. No, I think it was my first, I can't remember if it was, I moved here in December, and really, I just kind of moved my shit in. I moved and went back home cause it was like Christmas time, but it was probably like January, February when I played my first round. I'd never done that before. You know, I'd always been in bands, and I played my first round, and then just started trying to play more rounds and write a lot of songs, and you know, and then find the guys to put a band together to be the Dirty South, you know.
Yeah. So once you got rolling, like as the Dirty South, was that just with it being Nashville, typically it's a country music town, right? So like with you guys having that unique sound, did you find it hard to like kind of slide into like that circuit of like trying to find places to play and finding that audience?
Not really places to play, but you know, it's wild, man. It's like several years ago, you know, nobody really wanted anything to do with the country rock crossover thing, you know?
Yeah.
And now it's like the end thing, and which is great. But it's like, I've always thought it's funny. It's like how people perceive us. It's, if you ask the, you know, what traditionally has been the country crowd, it's like, oh, they're a rock band. But you ask all my rock and metal friends, it's like, man, they got an awesome country band. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's so interesting.
It's like, you know, it's like, where do you, that's just really like a constant struggle is like, where do we fit in?
Yeah.
But I mean, it's like, you know, I kind of like it, you know, we're outcasts, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, those are, the outcasts are typically the ones who like find that audience and like kind of, in a way, kind of like pioneer that sound. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah,
I just know, you know, there are a ton of people out there like me that are in every, you know, small town across America that listen to heavy metal and hard rock, but they shop at Piggly Wiggly, and they're out there, you know, they hunt and they fish and do all the shit, you know, but they listen to Pantera.
Yeah. Dude, exactly. And like, I think if there's any two genres that like link together the best, it probably is country and metal. Because like you said, Pantera, I mean, fuck, they were doing it. But, you know, Pantera is a metal band, but like they had that, you know, they had a bit of that shit in them too.
The Rednecks.
Yeah, they're fucking Rednecks. Cowboys from Hell.
Yep. And we actually we put out a covers EP last year called Smothered and Covered.
It's fantastic, dude. I listened to it like three times today.
Awesome. Thank you. And, yeah, we got our we got a mashup cover on there called Grundy County Cowboys, which is a mashup of Cowboys from Hell and Sold. The Grundy County auction incident.
Yeah. And it's funny because like the first song I heard from you guys was, I don't even know if it was out yet. It was the Thunder Cash.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Nick sent it to me on like a like a sound memo. I'm like, who the fuck are these guys? Like, this is nuts. But it's kind of funny how you like, you know, like mixing two songs together seems like from the outside, like, well, anyone could do that, you know? But like, no, like to make it fit and work as well as that did. Like, you know, that, how do you, when you did make that album, like, how'd you choose the songs? Like, how'd you decide these two songs will mix well together? Was there like a certain process you went through?
It really started out as when we came back from COVID and we were putting, you know, a lot of these gigs that you got to play starting out, you're going to play a lot of cover songs. Yeah. And we were just running through songs one day and it's like, you know, how can we, everybody plays Folsom Prison the exact same, you know? Yeah. And it's like, how can we make this different? You know, how can we make this us? And the guitar player just fucking around and started going, jin, 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 jin. You know, it's like, all right, so, and it evolved out of that, you know, and the same thing with Grundy County Cowboys was, you know, what can we, this is, I love this song, the song. So how can we make it metal, you know, and it's just adding the, you know, Cowboys from Hell riff to it.
Yeah, man. Well, it worked. I could say like, that's what made a fan out of me for sure. And now that I think of it, like when you guys being the live band that you are, like you said earlier, like you guys are a live band. That's what like you pride yourself on doing is the live show. Right. So when COVID kind of settled down and being in a city like Nashville where live music is everything, was it easy to like, did you get like all those crowds back like that? Just people hungry for live music again, or was it kind of slow and all that to get back together?
Yeah, I think when we did, you know, like I said, before COVID, we had the show, it was called Dirty Thursday. And when we came back, we moved it to Friday and it's called Filthy Friday now. And I want to say the first one we had was summer of 2021. And I don't recall it being like, wow, this is a bum night. You know, I feel like, I feel like, you know, we always have pretty good crowds there. And, I mean, Live Oak really never, I remember going to Live Oak in June of 2020 and thinking, we're back, baby, you know, and like nobody's wearing masks. Like, and it's like, okay, this is it, you know, let's fire up the band, you know. But it wasn't until another year later that, you know, I feel like it really, things really opened up. You know, you had that in summer of 2020, that first kind of, okay, we're doing this, where everybody's back now and everything's shut down again. I feel like, I really can't remember, but our first shows back from COVID were actually out in Washington State, and we flew out there.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah, which is like really shut down out there, you know?
Yeah, I'd imagine.
And, but we played at, there's an awesome racetrack out there in Shelton, Washington called The Ridge. And, we played a Trans Am event. And 2 weeks later, we played at a Moto America, like, super bikes event.
That seems and, right up your alley for yeah, your band.
Incredible, man. It was awesome shows and just awesome folks out there. And you get to, you know, it's the awesome thing about what we do is you get to see the country in places you've never seen. But that was in June of 2021. And then, and I think it might've been, I think it was July 2021 when we had our first Filthy Friday.
Okay.
And, you know, it was great. You know, it was everybody's just happy to be playing shows, you know?
Yeah. I'd imagine. I mean, you know, like all of us remember how it was then when they all, the show started kicking off again. Like, it was like, all right, we're back, baby. Let's go. And, but yeah, man. And as a metalhead, what do you think of, this is a very broad question, stick with me here. What do you think of today? Because you're an 80s metal guy. I am too. Like, that's my favorite era. Like, what do you think of the state of the metal scene today? Like, what, like, is it rising, declining? Is it at a stagnate? Like, what do you think?
Well, I think there are a lot of metal bands doing a lot of big shows.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of metal bands selling a lot of tickets. So, you know, yeah. It's, I think it's good. And I feel like, I mean, you still got all the greats like Motley and Def Leppard that are still playing stadiums, you know?
Yeah.
And you got that side of it. And then you got all the younger bands that I feel like are more, I feel like the hottest current metal bands now are kind of in that like hardcore vein, you know. Mm-hmm. You got bands like Knock Loose.
Oh yeah, they're killing it right now.
Yeah, and them and Spirit Box and whoever mm-hmm. else, you know, and they're kind of and I when I was in high school, like, I was like real into death metal and band, you know, like Black Dahlia Murder is one of my favorite bands.
Yeah.
And but I think metal's in a great place, and I don't think it's really ever been, you know, early 90s when grunge came around, it was probably like at a lull, but that birthed bands like Pantera, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you know, even though, you know, Alice in Chains is a grunge band, you know, they're probably the most metal grunge band. They're my favorite grunge band by far.
Absolutely.
But I think the best era of metal was from about 87 to like 92. That's when you mm-hmm. had the best albums come out, in my opinion. And then and after that is when grunge came on, but also we got Pantera out of that as well.
Yeah. And like, you look at these big festivals like Rocklahoma, Louder Than Life, all these, you know, massive festivals. It's like, you're seeing even like the new metal bands are making a comeback. Limp Bizkit's going on fucking tour everywhere now. Right, Korn right. is, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And it goes in waves.
And exactly. And it's really just, you know, things kind of evolve and, you know, Shortly after that is where you get, you know, and, you know, 96, 97 is you start getting the new metal bands like Limp Bizkit and Korn. And then in 99 comes around and those bands are really hot. And that's when you get Slipknot, you know, comes out in 99. And it's like, you know, they're one of the biggest bands of all time in the genre, you know.
Still.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of festivals, you ever played like a festival or anything like that?
Oh yeah, we've played several. You know, some that come to mind is, you know, we've played Country Stampede a couple times out in Kansas, and we've played the Monsters of Rock, a couple of their events. We played Monsters on the Mountain a couple years ago, and then last year, the Cruise. We played the pre-party launch party event for the Cruise.
Nice. Yeah. And like, with you guys being like sounding how you are and having both those styles, excuse me, like you could play country and rock festivals. So that just opens up like a whole new opportunity, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And, you know, when I started this whole thing, I had that in mind, you know, it's like trying to, you know, we can make everybody money. You know what I'm saying? Like we can, we can play country festivals. We can play hard rock festivals, metal festivals, all the things. I think we fit in just fine. And every time that we've played those events, we've been well received, you know,
right.
There hasn't, you know, anybody throwing shit at us cause we suck or they didn't like it. You know, it's people are into it.
Yeah, man. That's awesome.
Even like when we go, I feel like the when we play country festivals, the songs that get the biggest reactions are like our heaviest songs, you know?
Yeah, dude. Because it's fresh and like it's something, you know, it's not the same old like steel guitar shit. Nothing wrong with that, but you know.
Our next song that we're releasing in a month is riddled with steel guitar.
Good. Awesome. Like, yeah, speaking of that, like, what do you guys got coming down the pipe? Like, new music and, like, touring, anything cool coming up?
Yeah, so we just put out a song. We're planning on releasing 10 songs over the next year, and they'll be broken up into two EPs. It's going to be Country Metal Volume 1 and Country Metal Volume 2. The first track off of Volume 1 came out about a month ago, a song called Country Alive. And the next one will be coming out here in just a few weeks. It's called Trouble with Trouble. And that's the one that's, it's like a real honky tonkin. It's like a, literally like a mix between Waylon Jennings, Warrant, and I don't know. When I wrote that song, I had kind of this riff that was inspired by Van Halen, Feel Your Love Tonight. But it's kind of got that 80s metal thing to it, like that, and Round and Round, and like Cherry Pie vibe, you know?
Yeah.
But the chorus is straight up like honky tonkin. It reminds me a little bit of, you know, Sturgill Simpson, You Can Have the Crown.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. It's like a mix between that and like 80s metal. So we got that. And another song that I'm really excited about is the song we have called Water in the Well. And it's probably going to be like our heaviest song to date. We wrote it with me and Johnny and Matt McKinney and our guitar player, Alex Walls, who had the riff and I had the idea and we all got in a room, you know, and made it happen. And, you know, I want to point out, you know, Alex is a motherfucker, you know, when it comes to like writing riffs, you know, and really, really happy to have him and just a killer guitar player and a great dude. And really excited he brought, you know, that riff to the table for Water in the Well. And it's going to be fun. I'm excited about it.
Awesome, man. It is funny, like, watching a great guitar player work and, like, create a fucking riff out of the sky. Like, it's just, I don't know. Like, you could pluck around on your strings all you want, but to make, like, that great, like, melody, you know?
Yeah, that's one thing that, you know, I love is a riff. I feel like a riff is a, you know, a great riff is a hook in itself, you know. You hear Pour Some Sugar on Me and that riff starts, you know exactly what it is.
Yeah.
You know. Absolutely. And it's everybody. And this kind of, you know, goes back to one of the reasons why I want to do this is you go down to Broadway and you got all these great bands down there playing all these country standards, right? But when they kick into Pour Some Sugar on Me or Girls, 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 the place flips on its head.
Yep.
And I'm like, why can't we do this, but with country songs. Yeah. And make country songs, you know?
Right.
So.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. You're doing it right. That's a great formula you guys got. And also with a different topic, but like with the social media being as big as it is now, and you kind of got to use it as a tool, right? Like you have to have the TikToks, the Instagram, all that. It seems like you guys are doing pretty damn well at it. Was that hard to jump into when you realized like this is kind of what we got to do now?
Maybe kind of, I've never really had a problem posting about things as far as like shows and new music, you know, but, when it became apparent that TikTok was breaking artists, it kind of was like, man, I don't want to talk into the camera and film myself and fucking lip sync and like all this stuff, you know? But now I've just kind of embraced it. You know, it's what you have to do. And I feel like these days, majority of folks that are getting deals of any sort, you know, it's stemming from a viral moment.
Yeah.
And, it's just really, it's the name of the game, like it or not, you know?
Yeah, man. But, I feel like we're at that, I'm 25 even. And like, it's hard to understand that shit. Like, you know, you had the Vine and all that, like the Vine era. And now it's just like the younger kids are taking over now. Like you got to appeal to them and all that. It's crazy, but that's life, I guess.
Absolutely. Yeah. I remember Vine, and I guess I think like Luke Combs is kind of how he got notoriety. He was doing all this, you know, a decade ago before anybody was, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Sure says something about him, man. So, Cody, dude, thanks for hopping on. This has been fun. I'm glad to finally talk to you. And by the way, everyone, buy his damn merch, cause that hat's badass. And I've been wanting one for a while. Haven't gotten around to it.
I'll send you one. Yeah, we got these, and I should have brought more up here, but, here's another one. But it's just got like the band's logo on it. But
oh, that's sweet.
I got camo hats, shirts, stickers, CDs, all the things. And that's another thing we take pride in is
merch game, merch, man.
Having awesome hats. And you can find that on Cody Parks and thedirtysouth.com.
Awesome. And real quick before we head out of here, I just remembered this during this interview. I was at, I think it was Butt Rock Night, and I went up to you, dude. And you probably don't remember this at all. I was like, three shoes to the wind. Yeah, okay. Because I went up and I was like, dude, where'd you get that hat? I need that hat. Like, it's my hat. Like, you could get it. Like, it's my band. So ever since then, it's been eating at me. I always forget because I have terrible memory. But I'm just like, I need that goddamn hat. But yeah, but trust me, guys, get the merch. Support Cody. It's great music. It's fun music, most importantly. It's just something different. Yeah. So, everyone, thanks for listening. Also, check out Raise Rowdy, Rowdy Alternative. We're on all the socials. Check out Cody Parks and the Dirty South, and thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Thanks for having me. My boots would look good on your bed, and I bet you can do some crazy things with those hips. Take it home now.